ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
One of the most ambitious projects in human history.
It's almost like the atomic bomb in terms of its transformational effect.
For decades, the breakthrough has been just around the corner.
That would bring our financial markets and electronic commerce to a grinding halt.
Will quantum computers change everything? I'm Jacinta Bowler. Binge the whole series now. Search for Science Friction, Dead and Alive, on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've just finished applying for a property. It's a bit of a shoebox, but it's close to where you want to be. The only thing is that you've just spent several hours amassing an army of identity documents and personal information to enter into the application form. And it turns out you've entered so much data that real estate agents need a computer to sort through it all.
They actually score the prospective tenants based on salary and ability to pay them the rent which is being asked. If there is insufficient data being collected or lacking data, then unfortunately their application, the tenant's application, will go to the bottom.
If that seems dystopian, you're not alone. The Australian Government's Privacy Commissioner has deemed the level of information collected in these applications to be excessive and has put the industry on notice. This is the first episode of our two-part investigation into these rental technologies. Today, why are platforms collecting so much information? What about it exactly is excessive? And does this exacerbate a power imbalance between renter and landlord? My name is Ray Johnston, and you're listening to Download This Show. You'll hear from several different people across these two special episodes, from researchers to the head of the Property Owners Association, all of them attempting to answer, is this data collection actually a problem? In our last special series, Opt Out, I was following a trail of a data leak of my own information. This time, I've been thinking back to when I was a 19-year-old single mum, and someone took a chance on me, giving me a place to rent. With new rental technologies, I would have been out of the game before it even started. And I have a suspicion I'm not the only one. So what is rent tech?
So rent tech is a term to describe any technology that interacts with renting. So that could be online listing sites where you search for a rental. It could be online rental application platforms. It could be rent payment apps or property management platforms where you log maintenance requests or communicate with property managers, as well as a whole suite of behind-the-scenes tools that real estate agents and landlords use. So it's a subset of a broader category of technology, which is generally referred to as prop tech or property technology. But prop tech also includes things like commercial real estate, retail, and so on. So rent tech is really the subset that has to do with renting. I also really like to use the term landlord tech, which is slightly more controversial. But the reason I like it is because it really brings to the forefront the sort of inherent power dynamics that are at play in this technology.
That's Samantha Floriani. She's a PhD candidate at Monash University studying rental technologies. Her research is called the machine-readable renter. So how long has this technology been around for? This is Kylie Davis, founder and president of PropTech Australia, the industry's peak body.
Well, it depends on your definition. So PropTech as a thing has probably been around for around about 20 years. The first PropTechs were realestate.com.au and then domain.com. But it's really become a bigger technology sector in Australia over the last 10 to 12 years. And that was with the advent of cloud technology. Rental tech's still fairly new. Property management's been around for about 20 years or so as well. So helping property managers manage property and do the work required in the background to look after landlords and tenants. But tech specifically targeted at making life easier for renters, which is what rental tech is supposed to do, has really only probably been around, I think, for about the last, 2020, I think, was when they first started to pop up.
So how much information is actually being collected? Here's Samantha Floriani again.
In research published by the Australian Urban and Housing Research Institute earlier this year, which was conducted by myself and a range of other excellent urban researchers, we found that some online application platforms were collecting up to 50 different categories or the variables of personal information. We're talking things like identity documents, usually 100 points of ID, years worth of living history and employment history. Usually it's at least 2 years worth, which I will note just to give a bit of context. That's more than most banks require to take out a bank loan. It usually includes details like your income details, including whether you receive some kind of government support payment, details about family members, pets, cars. It's really quite an extensive amount of information. And in my research with renters, I've also heard stories of other less common but still collected pieces of information, things like ethnicity, which of course raises concerns around bias and discrimination, as well as being asked to provide social media handles, which is just like wildly invasive.
Now, collecting this amount of data might not seem like an issue at first glance, but one of the flow-on effects of being so invasive in data collection is that you feel like you're competing against other people to provide more information, to be the most appealing option.
We're really talking about something that everybody needs access to. When we're asking for all of this personal information, there's this real sense that people have to prove that they are worthy of housing, that they have to compete against other people and share a lot of intimate details of their lives so that somebody else, whether it's a person or a technology, can assess them to say, are you really going to be good enough to live in this home?
This is Lena Przedetsky. She's a research fellow at the University of Melbourne. She was also one of the authors on the research published by the Australian Urban and Housing Research Institute that Sam mentioned before.
So that's really, I think, why people are finding it invasive. And it's also the inconsistency between applications. I've seen applications that have asked for people to provide links to their social media profiles. I've seen applications where people have been asked to provide details about their medical conditions. Now, why do these things matter when we are talking about an essential service? That's the real question.
And it's not just researchers who have called this data collection problematic. Back in April, the Privacy Commissioner, Carly Kind, handed down a decision saying that rent tech platforms must stop unfair and excessive personal information collection. We asked the Commissioner what this means.
So we narrowed in on looking at these platforms that facilitate the making of rental applications. You're asked to upload a whole lot of information. And we looked at these platforms through the lens of Australian privacy law, which says you can't just ask for and collect any personal information you want. There has to be some connection between that information and your functions and activities as a company, and that it has to be actually necessary for you to collect that information. It's not just that it's convenient or if it's desirable. It actually has to be something more than that. It has to be necessary. And we said, well, in the circumstances in which these platforms are facilitating a rental application that should really be about considering someone's ability to pay their rent and look after a property, what types of information are necessary to make that analysis, to make that judgment? And we looked at all the range of personal information that was being collected by these rent tech platforms. And we said, hold on a minute, they're going far beyond what's actually necessary to make a decision here. We looked at a range of different platforms, but then we zeroed in on ToApply as a rent tech platform that has a significant market share and also had a range of particularly concerning areas of contravention of Australian privacy law. And we launched an investigation into that last year.
We did try to contact ToApply for comment, but they didn't get back to us. So to sum up so far, we have a Privacy Commissioner investigation and other external research that has found these rental application companies are collecting too much data. But how did we get here? How did this data collection start? This is John Gilmovich, the president of the Property Owners Association and a licensed real estate agent who uses these applications.
Well, at
Around about 2007, I was working for one of the largest real estate franchises in the country. And they kind of caught on to the fact that we've got 1,000 franchisees here that need support. Some of them are struggling day to day. Their property managers are stressed out. They're not delivering a great customer service. You know, what part can we play in this? What can we do about this? And what can we create to help them? And so my first exposure was as like a consultant, coming out from the real estate industry itself and starting to look at what are the possibilities of creating, you know, this tech that could assist, you know, the property managers on the ground day to day. We were placing butcher's paper on walls and writing things out. I kid you not. There was 40, 50 pieces of butcher's paper on the wall with what are the possible solutions that we could come up with that would help, you know, the franchisees.
Kylie Davis, founder and president of the industry's peak body, had a more renter-focused understanding of how rent tech came to be.
So rental tech was initially conceived to make life easier for renters because, like a lot of tasks that we all have to do, there's a lot of duplication, a lot of manual processes. Like applying for somewhere to live is a tedious job, right? You're filling in a form probably for every property that you've seen that you like the look of, that you want to apply for. There's a lot of time that goes into filling in those details if you've been given a piece of paper and told, righto, send this in or photograph it or, you know, fill it in as a PDF. So the goal behind RentTech initially has been, well, if we can make it easier for renters to fill in their details once and then share it with the properties and the property managers that they want to apply for, that's saving them time. And in the same way that we don't really want to fill in forms if we're doing insurance or car registration or things like that, they were always conceived as a way of just making some of the tools that we are starting to use across our banking and our digital lifestyle available to renters, because a renter is renting doesn't mean that they have unlimited time to give to manual tasks either.
Samantha Floriani also has thoughts on this.
I mean, to their credit, I think that there are a lot of people in the rent tech industry, in the sector, who really have the best of intentions when it comes to wanting to improve the renting experience. I mean, anyone who is a renter definitely can relate to just the frustrating nature. There's a lot of tasks, there's a lot of communication, there's a lot of back and forth, you know, and technology can and I think should play a role in that experience. So I think there's a lot of optimism in the sector to try to use technology to, you know, improve those processes, to make them more efficient, to make them easier and so on. Unfortunately, by their very nature, you know, their business model relies on subscription from landlords or real estate businesses. So they are inherently designed to serve the interests of the people who are paying the bills, right? And so I think, you know, that there does need to be a bit more work in the rent tech space if it does want to genuinely serve the interests of renters.
Is there any information that you've been asked to collect from prospective tenants that has made you feel uncomfortable or like it crosses a line, or in your mind, is any information useful?
I guess any information is useful. I mean, I had one particular client request a bank statement, particularly, you know, seeking what their daily transactions are to see how they spend their money each week out of their pay packet. And I thought that was crossing the line, and I told the client that.
This is John Gilmovich again. Is that a kind of request that is common?
It's not common, but it does occur.
Do you know if other people also push back on that?
I believe so. I think that's getting into areas of, you know, in too much intimidation, I'd say. What they should be after is cash flow, and that's, you know, through payslips or the collection of, you know, savings. But they shouldn't really delve into, you know, what's being charged out on their MasterCard or, you know, that they've gone to the liquor store and bought, you know, a six pack of beers.
Yeah,
I think that's over the top, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. This all begs the question: does this contribute to a power imbalance? First up is Kylie Davis.
Well, look, I think if you've got, you know, 15 people applying for one property, and you've got a landlord. Well, look, the landlord doesn't care. The landlord just wants someone in their property who's going to pay their rent, look after it, and not be a problem. Like, it's usually the property manager thinking, right, well, I have to find the absolute best person for this property in the fastest time possible, so that my landlord doesn't lose any rental income. And look, that is, if there's 15 people for one property or 20 people for one property, yeah, there's absolutely an imbalance in that. So how do you determine which one out of the 15 is the right person for that property? You have to ask them questions. And that's what the data collection was. It was asking questions. Now, did it ask too many? Did people feel pressured to answer them? Those things occur in an unfair market. But it wasn't the rental tech that created that market, the unfairness of that market.
Do you think the rental tech contributes to the unfairness in any way?
I think if people felt pressured to that they had to answer this way, then that's something that we need to look at.
Now to John Gilmovich. Do you feel like sometimes some of these questions could make a tenant feel pressured or feel like there is a power imbalance?
I guess some would take that stance, but in most cases, for me as a practitioner, I've never been questioned about asking for such things. In most cases, you know, tenants are trying to get into a property and they do understand that, you know, the landlord's taking a risk on them. The property manager has to also take a risk and assess their application on its merits, and they're in competition with other applications as well. So I can understand that sometimes tenants do feel intimidated by handing over such information. I don't know what the fear is, though. Like, is it the fear of their data going astray, or they actually feel like it's unnecessary to hand over that data for, you know, a decision to be made about their application? It's hard to pinpoint exactly.
So how did we get to the point where so much information is being collected that the Privacy Commissioner has deemed it excessive?
I think it's also important to think about when this technology started up in 2020. Like, this is just around about the time of COVID. We were scanning QR codes all over the country and reporting on our locations everywhere at the time, filling in information left, right and centre. And so, you know, times have changed. Our expectations as a society as to what's acceptable have changed. And some of the new technology that's now possible, because our expectations have changed, are making the need for this level of data collection to be completely unnecessary. Traditionally, we've treated, as an Australian society, renters as people who weren't clever enough to buy a property, and I think that is completely wrong. What we need to be really mindful of is, how do we make tasks that are unpleasant that we just want the outcome for? How do we make them safe? How do we give them good guardrails? How do we make them as equitable as possible?
Let's get John's perspective. Are you comfortable with that decision? Do you think that what they were calling out as excessive, you would also deem excessive?
Looking at what's occurred, from a practitioner's perspective, as I am, that information becomes useful when and if you need to use it. By not having it, it's a barrier for the actual property managers and landlords. You know, in case something goes wrong, they need as much information to try and, let's say, for example, recover a debt, or to search and find a person in case they've absconded. You know, doing a runner out of a property is not uncommon. If a tenant falls into rent debt, or they're being evicted, they usually try and disappear, and unfortunately, they re-offend.
How common is that practice?
It's pretty common. It depends where you are in the suburbs. You know, lower demographics versus the upper demographics.
So, are there numbers on that?
Out in the western suburbs, there's a lot more cases than say the eastern suburbs, or in the CBD where you know salaries are more affluent and so forth. But it's very, very common that property managers spend a lot of time in and out of tribunal if they're managing properties out in the western suburbs or out in the coastals.
John, are there numbers on that are available?
Oh, yes, there are, yes. They're published through NCAT, the New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal.
It's quite hard to find the data John is talking about here. In the NCAT annual reports, there's no section that simply says, here's the number of people who have done a runner on a property. There's a bit of reading between the lines needed. Rent arrears is when you haven't paid your rent by the due date. It can be just one payment or more. After the interview, John said that the number of landlords taking tenants to the tribunal over rent arrears justifies the need to profile tenants. Rent arrears is, in fact, the main reason for application lodgements at NCAT, but according to the Tenants' Union of New South Wales, in these NCAT application instances, the tenant must still be living at the property, meaning they've not done a runner and thus do not need tracking down. There's also a tenancy survey, which the New South Wales Government Department of Fair Trading has been producing for the last 4 years. The survey is distributed to all principal tenants, landlords, and nominated agents upon the termination of a tenancy. The survey is voluntary, and so the sample's not representative, but it outlines under reasons a landlord has terminated a tenancy that 3.8% of agreements were ended because of rent arrears and 0.1% were because the tenant abandoned the premises. Because there's no concrete number we can cross-check here, it makes fact-checking this claim quite tricky. But back to our conversation with John. Going back to the technology, how has RentTech and PropTech helped you avoid problems like this that you describe occurring in the first place?
It doesn't foolproof the problem from occurring. Like, for example, you know, a very qualified, financially stable tenant can go bad during a tenancy. So it doesn't guarantee the landlord will have a favourable outcome. However, the collection of the data basically assesses the risk of that potential tenant. And some of those apps actually, you know, they rank or they give a score.
A score?
They give a kind of income, basically based on income and ability to pay rent. It doesn't choose the tenant for you, but the property manager can present the information in the way that basically brings it all together rather than hand over, you know, a 20-page paper document times 10 to the landlord to make a decision, which they're going to say, well, hang on a sec, this is just way too much work for me to do. I cannot decipher this sort of information right in front of me. So the property manager has to shuffle these applications in the hierarchy based on the data that's being collected. So for example, if there is insufficient data being collected or lacking data, then unfortunately their application, the tenant's application, will go to the bottom.
So if a tenant hasn't filled out all of the boxes on the form, they're likely to get a much lower score than someone who has.
Yes, and the bottom line is that based on the property managers, you know, limited number of hours that they have in the day to manage all these processes, they're not going to be chasing tenants for more information. They're just going to run with the ones that have actually supplied it.
So how do we ensure this sort of data collection is something that benefits renters as well as landlords and agents, and in a way that doesn't create an imbalance of power? Samantha Floriani thinks looking overseas may hold some answers.
In Scotland, they have a landlord register. What that basically means is that if you want to become a landlord, you have to apply and you have to demonstrate that you have like good financial standing, like well enough to be able to actually maintain and look after the property. You can demonstrate that you're doing X, Y, and Z compliance. You go on a register, which makes it easier for there to be accountability and enforcement of rental protections and minimum standards and so on. And I think that that would be a really useful thing to implement in Australia. It's actually something that a group of housing organisations have called for in a report that was published in the last week of April, Essential Homes, I think it was called.
That report is in fact called Essential Homes, Why Renting is an Essential Service. We'll pop the link in our show notes.
Basically, what that would mean is that we would have a register of landlords so that we would be able to enforce the rules that we currently have more effectively. One of the challenging things in the rental sector is that it really relies on renters advocating for their own rights. Enforcement is very, very hard to achieve when you sort of don't have much oversight of what's going on.
She also says it would go some ways to improving the information asymmetry between renters, agents, and landlords.
Currently, you know, they know so much about us. They have so much of our data. You rarely have any kind of visibility the other direction.
Coming back to the decision the Privacy Commissioner made targeting rental technology platform to apply, will the determination make a difference in the long term?
To apply itself, they were actually very cooperative with the investigation, and I made a range of declarations about what they need to do, including ceasing to collect a whole range of personal information, as well as overhauling their systems and processes more broadly. We have the ability to ensure compliance with the determination, and we will be doing that over the period in which the declarations play out, which is over a year. To apply has to take a number of steps over that period. And if we find that to apply hasn't taken any of the steps that it's required to take, we can bring that as enforcement action before the federal court.
This determination still only covers a single company in the industry. Lena Przedetski agreed this was a step forward, but there was only one real way to ensure renters are protected.
Best way to ensure that consumers are effectively protected from the get-go is to ensure that the law is very clear and very explicit. What would have been even better, and we can still get there, is to actually prohibit the collection of certain types of information. And we can do that through Residential Tenancies Acts, and we have seen that in certain jurisdictions.
That's all for this week, but our next episode will cover data security.
Do you understand how some people might see it as a pretty big risk putting all of that information in one place, in one form?
Of course.
And what would you say to those people?
They shouldn't fear it.
And dark patterns and their relationship to rental technologies.
Dark patterns are things that essentially manipulate consumers, often into making choices that are not necessarily in their best interests. The Privacy Commissioner called out three. She called out confirmed shaming, biased framing, and bundled consent.
All that and more coming up in our next episode. If you're enjoying this special investigation so far, send us an email on downloadthisshow@abc.net.au. We'd love to hear about your experiences with rental technologies as a renter, an agent, or a landlord. Thank you to all of our guests for this episode, as well as Leo Patterson-Ross from the Tenants Union of New South Wales for help with our fact-checking. And thank you to my producer, Jesse Kay. My name is Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.